Welcome to Close Up Radio, where our hosts, Doug Llewellyn and Jim Masters, engage today's top thinkers from around the world to bring you information, inspiration, and thought-provoking ideas you can put to use in your personal and professional life right now. Covering a broad range of topics, Close Up Radio digs deep to discover what makes today's top thinkers tick. Close Up Radio, where ideas matter. And now, here's today's host, Jim Masters.
Thanks so much for joining us, everybody. We're live worldwide on Close Up Radio, a service of the award-winning Close Up Television and Radio. Very honored to welcome to the show from California, Dr. Wayne Whalen, highly sought-after chiropractor and founder and owner of Whalen Chiropractic. According to Dr. Wayne Whalen, a full-service chiropractor who has practiced chiropractic medicine for over 35 years, he has co-authored multiple peer-reviewed guidelines for the profession. He recommends seeing a chiropractor at the onset of minor pain before it becomes a serious problem. He sees the problem from a mechanical perspective, and he has co-authored the national guidelines to address these ailments in a more holistic approach rather than relying on the over-the-counter prescription drugs. His first recommendation would be a six-visit trial, including spinal manipulation, exercise advice, and other options, because most spinal problems relate to mechanical dysfunction. They also respond well to mechanical rather than chemical treatments. He recommends a thorough evaluation, trial of care, and assessment for improvements after treatment. And Dr. Whalen also points out that seeing a chiropractor is a much safer option than taking drugs or having surgery. There's a reason, you know, there's an opioid crisis in the country, and a lot of it stems from all the physicians overprescribing drugs that are both addictive and deadly. Dr. Whalen now works with a team of practicing chiropractors who have created national guidelines on addressing lower back pain. A couple of years ago, he published a guideline on neck pain, and most recently, chronic pain. His work is all evidence-based, and although he doesn't make promises, he explains how he approaches pain management. Website is www.drwhalen.com. drwhalen.com is the website to check out. Very excited to welcome him for the next 30 minutes for our exclusive conversation here on Close Up Radio. Dr. Whalen, welcome to the program. It's a pleasure to have you with us today, and we welcome you to the show.
Thanks, Jim. I'm happy to be here.
You're very, very welcome. What first inspired you to go into this work? What laid you down the path of wanting to become a chiropractor in the very beginning, some of your own life's journey of inspiration?
Well, I didn't start off with a plan to become a chiropractor. I was an undergraduate in psychology at UC San Diego, and my girlfriend at the time said, hey, there's an opening in the psychiatric hospital. Why don't you try that out? So that's what I worked at as an undergrad, taking care of psychiatric patients while I was actually going through nursing school, of all things. I realized pretty quickly it was kind of hard to tell who should be on which side of the glass, and that was really not psychology was not my calling. I spent a number of years as an ER nurse and a life flight helicopter emergency nurse, and I was working at UCSD Medical Center, which is a teaching hospital, and I had at that point decided I think I'm going to try to go to medical school. But one day I was looking around at the residents and the interns and all running around like chickens with their heads cut off, to my view, and realized that wasn't my calling either. So I was talking with a nurse because I knew I wanted to be some kind of a doctor, and I didn't want to be a dentist, and I wasn't that into feet. So podiatry wasn't singing to me. And she said, well, why don't you be a chiropractor? And I said, those quacks. And then I realized I knew nothing about chiropractic. I just had this prejudice based on, I didn't even know what it was based on. So I started doing some research, and this is way before the internet and Google. Went to the library and looked up some information about it, which I found intriguing. And then I just randomly opened the Yellow Pages. Some of us may remember Yellow Pages. There was a picture of a chiropractor who looked like a nice guy near me. So I called him up and said, hey, can I just come down and watch what you do? And I figured I'd be there for an hour. And about 6 hours later, I walked out knowing what my calling was, and that was almost 40 years ago.
That's amazing, isn't it? That's incredible. Time flies by, certainly in a New York Minute. Let's talk about the work of a chiropractor. Maybe you can detail it for us in the work that you do, because sometimes people just have this outside understanding of what a chiropractor does, but not a real good, deep understanding of the work of somebody like yourself.
Well, and let me just preface that by saying, you know, to become a chiropractor, most of us have an undergraduate degree, and then it's a four-year program, just like medical school or dental school, to be able to sit for a licensing board and get a license to practice. There are lots of different avenues in chiropractic in terms of how people practice. I have many colleagues who are passionate about sports chiropractic, and they work virtually every NFL team and basketball team, and every professional team has chiropractors because they find that it enhances their ability to perform. I have a lot of family practice patients that I've just seen over the last 35 or so years, but I also focus a lot on personal injury, auto accident type patients, and I'm considered an expert in workers' compensation in California. I teach other doctors, including medical doctors, how to do disability evaluations and those sorts of things. So there's lots of little niches within the profession, just like there is in most other professions. But I would say probably the majority of my colleagues, treat families, people who walk in with their headaches or their neck pain, their sore shoulder, or their tennis elbow, or their carpal tunnel, or whatever.
Yeah, absolutely. Do you find more of that happening now? Because people have been home the last couple of years, working from home, they're on Zoom, they're on their computers, they've been seated, they've been on the keyboards a lot more, even just of late with the advances in technology. Do you find more neck and arm and hand and back pain and things that are happening as a result of all of that?
Absolutely. I mean, we were never really designed to sit at a desk for 8 hours a day and not suffer any consequences. And what I've seen since 2000, is that you had a lot of people who immediately got stuck going home. Maybe they were given a laptop. And so they're sitting at their coffee table with their head bent over trying to type on a laptop. And wondering why they're having all these headaches and neck pain and their upper back's killing them and their low back's bothering them. It all comes down to ergonomics. You can't sit at a keyboard and type thousands and thousands and thousands of times, per hour and not pay for that. So when you have your head forward flexed, for every inch your head is forward of neutral, and your head weighs about a bowling ball's worth, right? So let's say about 10 pounds. For each inch forward of neutral, your neck sees another 10 pounds. So if your head is poked 2 or 3 inches forward of neutral, your neck and shoulders are seeing 40 pounds. So imagine, having a fairly large bag of dog food strapped around your shoulders and upper back all day long and wonder why your neck hurts. And ditto for other things, like if your mouse is not ergonomic or it's not in the right place, your keyboard's in the wrong place, all of those things add up. You can do any of that stuff for 20 minutes or half an hour or whatever. You can tolerate those activities for brief periods, but you can't do it hour after hour, day after day, and not pay a price if the ergonomics are not correct.
Mm-hmm. Right, exactly. And that's so important to recognize. What happens when a chiropractor does an adjustment? Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, there are many different forms of manipulation. The more classical, or the one that I think patients the public probably thinks of as the crack. What we do is it's called high velocity, low amplitude manipulation. And it's sort of the end of a continuum that goes from just barely stretching a joint to stretching a joint as far as it'll go to providing a very shallow, a millimeter or two deep, very quick impulse that what we call gaps the joint. It opens up the joint, and the popping sound is just gas within the joint. What it does is releases some of the pressure, if you will, within the joint, but it also causes neurological effects. So, your body is constantly telling your brain where it is in space and the condition of all the joints. So if you think for a moment about your right big toe, Well, you weren't thinking about it a minute ago, but now if you focus on it, you can feel, yeah, there's where I can feel my sock. I can feel where it is in relation to the ground, all those things. Well, it doesn't only happen when we think about it. That message is constantly being sent to the brain, and your brain is constantly sending messages down to the muscles to control how much tone is in the muscles, how much tone is to some extent in the ligaments. It's what keeps us, you know, upright and gives us the ability to walk or move. So when we do that manipulation, you get a barrage of information from that joint that goes back to the brain, which kind of lets the brain reset things, if you will. It's kind of like, you know, rebooting the computer, if you will, for that particular joint. So we used to talk about, you know, bone out of place, pinching on a nerve. Well, you know, that was great in the 1940s, but that's not really what the current state of the art is in terms of what the effects of manipulation are. And I want to mention that that's not the only kind of manipulation we do. There are hundreds of different approaches. Some use a little spring-loaded instrument, which provides a specific amount of force, very quick but very shallow, but it's up to 24 pounds per square inch, so it's enough to move things around a little bit. Other doctors of chiropractic use much lower force techniques, including myofascial release. I use a technique called drop table, where it's a specially built table that allows me to introduce a force I can cock the table, put the force in the patient, and the table will drop about an inch, so the table absorbs the force, so it's pretty gentle for the patient. There are lots of other techniques, and you know, manipulation is you know, one of our key interventions. But it's by no means the only intervention. We spend a lot of time talking to patients about exercises and stretches and those kinds of things. We use modalities like electrical stimulation, laser therapy, traction, and ultrasound, and a number of other things.
Mm-hmm. That's so important, and it's all part of the process itself. And you embrace a natural approach to pain management, right?
Well, yes. I mean, chiropractors, by design, we don't do drugs. There's, you know, osteopaths and medical doctors have those tools as part of their armamentarium. We practice a different, more natural approach. And, you know, we've been saying for 125 years that, you know, try natural things first and, you know, maybe drugs second and surgery last. And some of that's, you know, some of that philosophy, I think, is beginning to become more appealing to the public, particularly in light of the opioid crisis. You know, how many people have died from opioids, but you know, a lot of people don't realize, you know, anti-inflammatories like ibuprofen are not benign just because you can buy them at the grocery store. There was a National Institute of Medicine study done in 2010 that showed about 16,500 people die in this country every year from taking anti-inflammatory medication. It has a lot of effects, including potential gastric bleeding, so you can bleed to death. It can cause fatal heart attacks, and it has an effect on the kidneys and on the liver. So I'm not saying you should never take those. It's just, you know, everything has a risk and everything has a benefit. If you compare the potential risk of manipulation to the potential risks of anti-inflammatory medications, we are thousands of times safer. So maybe it's worth trying chiropractic first before you start embarking on taking drugs. And in fact, ironically, many of the national medical societies, including American College of Physicians, released a paper in 2017, a clinical practice guideline, and I'm familiar with those because I've written a number of them for our profession. And their guideline said before you try anti-inflammatory medication, try massage therapy, acupuncture, chiropractic, and physical therapy first. Not everybody does. In fact, probably not most people do, but that's what the guideline says. An interesting trivia fact, which is it takes about 17 years for a scientific fact to become a widely practiced. So
yeah,
it'll be a while.
Yeah, that is very, very true. You know, what's really interesting is there's always misconceptions, too, about, you know, the work that a chiropractor does. Tell us about those misconceptions, those myths.
Probably one of the most widespread and erroneous ones is about manipulation of the cervical spine, the neck. You hear people, don't let them touch your neck. Okay, so let's just explore that for a moment. As I said, anti-inflammatory medications are a risk, and I tell my patients, you know, driving here is a whole lot, you know, thousands of times more dangerous than anything I'm going to do to you. But the chiropractor has always been cognizant of the widespread misconceptions about it. So there have been a number of studies done. There was one done about 10 years ago where in Canada, I believe it was Saskatchewan, and they have national health, so they can track every diagnosis, every doctor, every visit, every everything. So they did. They looked at 100,000 patient years, meaning they looked at 100,000 patients over a period of 10 years, and they were looking for potential stroke. So they were able to look at all the diagnoses of this kind of a stroke that were presented to an emergency department. So then they went back and they looked and say, well, how many of those people that had that stroke went to a chiropractor in the 2 weeks before they had that stroke, figuring they could get some estimate of the potential risk. So they did the statistics, and it turned out the potential risk based on that, now that we're talking an association, not necessarily causation, but the potential risk was one what's called a vertebral artery dissection, injury to the neck artery. One of those in every 5.85 million adjustments. That's pretty rare, considering NSAID's potential fatal reactions are somewhere in the order of, let's say, 1 in 10,000 to 1 in 100,000, depending on who you look at. So we said, well, that's interesting. So that's association in the same way that the dawn coming up may be associated with my newspaper being there, but it's not causation. The dawn didn't cause my newspaper, nor did my newspaper cause the dawn. So we asked and said, well, okay, that's very interesting. What was the statistics for the patients who went to their medical doctor first, their family practice doc? And it turned out the risk was higher. And the ultimate conclusion was, there was no association of manipulation causing stroke. No causation. There was an association. And the reason that was finally determined was people who have this certain kind of neck artery dissection or tear, their symptoms are neck pain and headache. And where do people with neck pain and headache go? They go to the chiropractor and they go to their medical doctor. So it wasn't that the chiropractor caused the artery dissection, which led to the stroke. It's that they probably had it walking in, and either the doctor didn't notice it, or the symptoms weren't bad enough to be evident. And that conclusion's been supported by subsequent studies. There was a study done by neurosurgeons in New York, I think, Cornell, if I remember, but I could be wrong. But it looked at all of the evidence and had made the same conclusion. There's no evidence of causation, there is evidence of association.
The association, right, exactly. And that's very important for people to realize. Would you consider your field and what you're doing holistic? And do you prescribe medicines along the way as well?
I think
you just won a prize.
Yeah. Yeah, the prize for forgetting to turn my phone off. My apologies.
This just so, in to the newsroom.
Right. All of us practice a little bit differently. So I do some nutritional counseling and advice, but others of my colleagues really focus heavily on that kind of approach. A lot of it, of what we deal with our day-to-day patients is lifestyle advice. I mean, you know, it's our lifestyles that are killing us in the United States, but along with all the other things that come along. But if you can talk to people about eating healthier, losing weight, getting exercise, you know, reducing your stress levels, you know, all of those things are useful and helpful to patients' overall health.
Absolutely right. Yeah, it's all part of it. Would you recommend young people also to use your services as well, doctor?
Yes, and I see a fair number of younger patients. And again, it tends to become, you know, the individual chiropractic doctor's preference. So So I'll see a lot of teenagers and some younger kids, because you ever see what those people, what those kids do? They're falling off monkey bars or, you know, getting slammed in soccer or whatever else. They're getting hurt. We just blow it off. There are other chiropractors, though, who focus primarily on pediatrics. And in fact, the group that I participate with in writing those best practice guidelines is currently working on a pediatric guideline in conjunction with the Australian experts. And so, yes, some doctors, they treat everything from immediately after birth, you know, all the way up to, I think my oldest patient was 102. You know, and obviously we modify the technique. You don't do the same thing to a 20-year-old that you do to a 102-year-old or a 2-month-old.
Right, exactly. Yes, exactly right. You also have a book, and congratulations on that. Tell us about the book that you co-authored. I mentioned that a little bit in the introduction.
Well, I think what we're really referring to is these guidelines, these best practice guidelines. So when I got out of chiropractic school, there was no research on much of anything for almost all healthcare disciplines. Whether you were an MD or a DC, you did what you were taught to do by the people that came before you. In the ensuing years, we have moved and migrated towards a more evidence-based approach, meaning it's not just what I was taught. It's here's what the scientific literature says. So we do. In medicine, it's easy to do randomized control trials on drugs because you give one group of patients with a problem the actual drug and the other group of patients a placebo, and nobody knows which is which, and then run them through taking it for a while and then see who got better and see who didn't and see who had side effects. So that's called a randomized control trial, which is kind of the gold standard in healthcare. Difficult to do with interventions like manipulation. People know when they've been touched, and there is actually an effect of just touching people. So how do you control for that? So most of the healthcare professions have now kind of grown up and began to look at what does the actual research say works and what doesn't work. There's stuff that doctors have been doing for decades that turns out was meaningless, worthless, and we should have never been doing it in the first place. But it takes research to figure that stuff out. And research by itself is helpful, but it's not really all that helpful to the provider or the public. And providers need to kind of be given a roadmap of, somebody has sifted through all this research and kind of distilled it down and say, okay, here's what you should do and here's what you shouldn't do. And that's what a clinical best practice guideline is, and they're developed all over the world. So we've just been involved the group we're called the Clinical Compass, and it's composed of practicing docs like myself and then research folks, and we try to work together to create clinical best practice guidelines that are understandable and usable by our colleagues. So you go through and sift through all the I think our latest paper had 134 references. So it's research that we looked through, and that doesn't count all the ones we threw out and didn't include. We distill it all down into statements, then you send it out to another group. In our case, for the low back paper, we're finishing, I think there's 65 other experts that looked at our evidence and either agreed or disagreed with our conclusions. And then if they disagree, then we have to fuss with it some more, and then you stitch it all back together into a paper that becomes a best practice clinical guideline. So I've had the fortune of being involved in the low back guideline. This is the third version because you have to rewrite them every 5 years. They take a year to do, and you got to redo them every 5 years. I've also been involved with the neck pain guideline that was published 2 years ago, as well as a number of others. And it's a passion of mine. I've always been, ever since I was in chiropractic school, been very excited about research and about an evidence-based approach to care and not just doing what somebody said, this is the way we've done it for 100 years. Let's keep doing it that way. Maybe, maybe not.
Right, exactly. I like that. Tweaking and evolving. Everything is always evolving, which is a beautiful thing. How do your sessions work? Do clients come to you over a course of time and How does that work?
So it's a great question. So our guidelines, whether it's for neck pain or low back pain, typically recommend 6 to 12 visits. That's what seems to work the best. There's not a ton of evidence on what the right dosage actually is. Only a couple of papers have been published. But that's a reasonable course of treatment. So if you were to come to see me, Jim, with let's say you had low back pain, that you know you overdid it in the yard last week, or you've had it for a little while, and I evaluated you and make sure there weren't any red flags, which means things that suggest something is more serious. But assuming I thought you were a reasonable candidate, and I would explain to you once I took your history and did your exam. I'd explain to you, here's what I think is going on, and here are your options. One option is typically to do nothing. And usually, you know, by the time people come to see me, they've had a problem for a while, and most of them haven't been doing anything. So I usually ask them, you know, how's that working for you so far? And they chuckle. And then I explain to them, all right, you know, the second option you have is what most Americans do, which is better living through chemistry. Take enough pain medications and muscle relaxants, you probably won't hurt, but you're if it's a mechanical problem, chemical solutions don't work very well for that. It's like having the front end of your car out of alignment, and you keep slapping new tires on it and putting STP in the gas tank, hoping that's going to fix it. You know, put the front end back in alignment, and the rest of the stuff will generally take care of itself. So once we've explained to people what their options are, and including what I think would be the appropriate treatment that I might provide, then, you know, we get their consent and begin a trial of treatment. I typically am being conservative. I usually tell people, give me 6 visits. Let's see where you are. I don't know that I'm going to fix this in 6 visits, but at the end of 6 visits, you and I should both know that we're on the right track. And if we're not, then I'm either refer you someplace else or we'll start doing other things. Like maybe at that point we take x-rays. You know, another bonus tip for your audience, most people don't need x-rays the first time they come in. That's for medical doctors and chiropractors alike. Virtually every guideline suggests a trial of conservative treatment before you take x-rays because x-rays aren't benign. It's ionizing radiation. So unless you have significant trauma or I'm worried that you might have a tumor or you may have some kind of a bone infection or some other bad thing, what we call red flags, you probably don't need the x-ray. But, you know, if I treat you for half a dozen times or so and you're just not getting any better, then I might think, maybe we do need an x-ray at this point. Maybe there's something more going on that meets the eye. So our recommendations typically, and this is how I practice, is you do short trials of treatment and follow up. Is the patient improving or not improving? If they're not improving, try a different, you know, technique or approach, or refer them for either co-management or treatment outside the chiropractic approach. So I do a ton of work on. So I have lots of people with shredded rotator cuff muscles and knee meniscus that's, you know, ground down. So I work with a cadre of orthopedic surgeons and neurosurgeons and spine surgeons and pain management guys and a lot of other different specialties. And sometimes I don't know what the right I don't have the tools to solve their problems, but I play quarterback. So I kind of manage their case and make sure they get to the right specialists. And typically at the end of a case like that, I write up their final disability report. But these days, and I guess the last thing I'll say is I've seen such a transition in the 35 years I've been in practice to where the first medical doctors didn't want anything to do with us, and now we work collaboratively a lot.
That's fantastic. That really is. I want to mention the website as well, drwhalen.com, and that's DR for Dr. Gang, DR, and then Whalen, WHALEN.com. We only have about 60 seconds left. Do you have a quick success story maybe you could share before we wrap?
Yeah, I'll make a short one. I had a 19-year-old lady who I don't even know how she found my office, but she had been having daily and constant headaches for 3 years. She tried at least a half a dozen medications. She'd had CAT scans and dog scans, and she had been to 3 neurologists. Nobody could touch her headaches. Somehow she found my office, and I examined her, and I found, you know, she had this mechanical problem going on the top of her neck, and I said, you know, this is typically what I look for if I think I might be able to help. So do you want to try? Sure. So I adjusted her neck. I said, come back tomorrow, let's see how you're doing. So she walks in. She's got this weird look in her eyes, and she says, what did you do to me? And I'm thinking, oh boy, here we go. And I said, why? She says, because this is the first morning I've woken up in 3 years without a headache. And she was angry, not at me, but at her medical doctors who never suggested that she tried a chiropractor for her headaches, even though the literature was out there supporting it. So, and I've seen a number of people like her, but yeah, I always remember her.
Incredible. DrWhalen.com is the website. Our very special guest is Dr. Whalen. We are so excited to have him here, and I really hope that we get a chance to chat with you again and maybe hear some more success stories, Dr. Whalen. This is really a pleasure. Dr. Wayne Whalen is a highly sought-after chiropractor and founder and owner of Whalen Chiropractic, based in California. Thanks for joining us. This was a pleasure. I hope you enjoyed the time as much as I have, Doctor, and we hope to explore some more down the line. That would be a real pleasure.
Yeah, thank you, Jim. I appreciate the opportunity. It was a pleasure.
You're very welcome. Keep up the amazing work that you're doing, Doctor. And again, gang, if you would like to check out his extraordinary work and make contact, go to the website, drwhalen.com. Jim Masters here. Thank you for your time this time. Till next time. Right here on Close Up Radio. And stay tuned. We'll be back momentarily with another amazing guest as well, featured right here on the program. Till then, for all of us, have a terrific day. Thanks for listening, and bye for now.
You have been listening to a broadcast from Close Up Radio, a division of Close Up Television, Incorporated. For more information about our show and to be considered for future broadcasts, please visit closeuptelevision.com. You may also learn about us on social media and listen to us on podcast and internet radio. Thank you for joining us, and we hope that you have an empowered and productive day.